Live and on stage in studio, D.M.A. Roberts welcomes artists from the Portland Experimental Theater Ensemble and their world premiere show, Uncle Vanya. Then it's playwright C.S. Whitcomb and a look at her show, Parnassus on Wheels, part of the Fertile Ground Festival of New Works 2018. And at 11:30, Making Contact features some of the fallen heroes of 2017, including social justice organizers, activists, and community leaders. The time now is 9:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Rocker T and the 7th Street Band on Saturday, January 6th, beginning at 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Rocker T is from Brooklyn and has 7 albums released by a number of labels playing reggae and reggaeton. Also performing will be the local artist Aaron Nigel Smith, Heavy City, and DJ Kansaman. Again, that's Rocker T and the 7th Street Band on Saturday, January 6th, 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Flashpoints, we present an encore broadcast of one of our best interviews from our week at Standing Rock with Tom Goldtooth. My name is Mike Biggs. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.
Flashpoints. This is Dennis Bernstein with Tony Gonzalez. And, well, we're here at the front lines with the water protectors, and we're talking about, the struggle now that we thought was going in a different direction. And we're joined by Tom Goldtooth, who has been fighting to save the environment in this world, to protect all of us from global warming. And we thought we were making progress. You were in Paris. Things were looking good. The United States was finally participating. But here we are, witnessing great destruction. You want to talk a little bit about what happened then and how we got here?
Well, all of the work that I've been doing and all the work that we collectively have been doing within the Indigenous Environmental Network involves the women, children, families, community, our men, our elders, both elected tribal leaders, as well as our grassroots, especially what we call our traditional societies, our youth especially. And so we've been working with this form of organizing approach that represents the circle within our communities, that red hoop. And you could say that we've been part of a process of strengthening and mending that sacred hoop of our many indigenous tribal nations and our communities since the beginning formation of our network in 1990. We come from many fires, from the American Indian Movement to women's societies, to other societies like the White Clay Society, where one of our elders, James Main Sr., comes from the Gros Ventre Nation in Montana. So we've been working with a lot of these people as the foundation of our work, the Big Mountain Sovereign Nation, many of them there, and many people who still been carrying on and practicing our culture, the language, and our spirituality as a foundation of our identification with the sacredness of our Unchimaka, our grandmother earth. So with that is as a foundation, that's how we work with our communities. And when there was a call for action at this United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, and this meeting in Paris being actually the last stop of over 20 years of world leaders coming together with their scientists, with their policy holders, and in the hallways, the petroleum companies and the corporations, what they call Conference of the Parties 21. That's what took place, 21 years. We were there. We brought our native people from the front lines of communities that we had been working with for many years, who have been on the front lines of asking for a stop, a halt to the burning and of the concentration of these greenhouse gases, combustion of these greenhouse gases. So we've been on the front line of stopping climate change by stopping oil developments from Alaska with red oil, resisting environmental destruction on indigenous lands. That's the furthest north of our network of Yupik, Athabascan peoples that are fighting some of the largest oil companies in this world, from Shell to many others, to the tar sands in Alberta, Canada, which is one of the largest industrial complexes that is just raping Mother Earth, and one of the major contributors in Canada to climate change. This tar sands is a synthetic corrosive oil. It's not like the oil from long time ago, but Canada needs to take that and transport that oil to the United States for exportation. There's no oil refineries in Canada, and it's not to be oil refined here in the United States. It's part of a market system. So we've been working with communities, for an example, fighting this arteries, these spider webs. In fact, one of the dreams of the Lakota woman from this region had a dream that this pipeline represents a black snake. And that's very familiar to us, because with that black snake comes confusion. It comes with it fear. And it really wants to work on the emotions of our defenders of the sacred waters, the Miniwichoni. It wants to bring out the emotions and anger of our young men and our women. And one of the prophecies that was told to the people here in this camp, the Ocheti Shokonwi, the seven council fires of the Sioux Nation, the dialects of Lakota, Nakota, and Dakota, is that the council fire would come back together, and that the fire will be lit, that there's many things good that will come about when our people start to unite again around this council fire, and that there'll be new protocols of how we meet with other native indigenous nations from the four directions of this world. And they are all coming now. There's flags here that represent these Native nations, not only from Canada, Alaska, and the United States, but also the Maori people from New Zealand. And the Suriyaku also brought a flag representing the Amazon Quechua peoples of Ecuador. So we see this prophecy coming true, but also how we are to interact and build alliances with the settlers, the immigrants, the white people, and other races that live here in our homeland. So they are coming as well. So this is that time and that prophecy of the mending and strengthening not only our Red Nation hoop, but the human hoop on how we are to come together. So here, that's what we did in Paris as the beginning, you could say, of recognition of this prophecy, of recognizing the rising up of the indigenous power. That's why we developed a campaign called Indigenous Rising. People can go to the website indigenousrising.org, to where we brought frontline communities to Paris, and we told the world that we are the red line, and that we need to educate the world about what we have been talking about since the landing of the immigrants on our eastern shoreline. And we told them, you know, always that you have to respect our nature, you have to respect our life, you got to respect the trees, the minerals, the water. But these were new people, as I look back, and the teachings that I've been told, the teachings that really aren't talked about in the American education system, of how they cut down the trees and how the immigrants were afraid of the wild. Imagine that. People afraid of the wild, they're afraid of the wilderness, you know, and they're afraid of the wolves even. And some of the prophecies of some of the people where I live in Minnesota, the Ojibwe, the Anishinaabe, and also some of the Eastern Dakota, they talked about a time when the people would come and they would kill off the wolf and they would take their hair because they have a fear of the wolf, but the same way they would kill the native people as well. And they're the ones who initiated the first scalping, taking the hair of the red man. And so when the wolf, they said, comes back to be strong, and that's happening now, it's been happening, that the so will our native people get strong, be coming back in strength. So that's what's happening here. That's what this reflects. So going to Paris, we were there to come together with our indigenous brothers of the global south, and we came with one mind, one heart, to demand real solutions to whatever those world leaders were talking about. And they were talking about basically capitalism, climate and capitalism, about money, about management of forests, about business as usual. And even the insane process of where they introduce and implementing carbon trading, carbon offsets. And we were saying that you cannot trade anything in these Wishichu Biligana systems, to where it's part of the trade system of the world, to where they commodify nature, they financialize nature, they mercantile nature. And before you trade anything, you got to determine whose property right it is before you trade anything. So these are things I remember that Philip Deere, many of these elders, talked about. They said someday you're going to be paying for air. And this is one of those things, to where they're trading air, carbon, and methane. They're trading these in a system that basically leaves Chevron and Richmond off the hook from reducing their release of greenhouse gases at those oil refineries. Shell in Martinez, for an example, California, who's expanding their combustion of oil, and tar sands, or whether it's Alaska for offshore drilling, they are expanding. It's business as usual, but they try to look good on paper, and they say, we purchase carbon credits in Brazil. We have carbon credits in Africa, in Indonesia, Southeast Asia, in Latin America, and they say we've gone carbon neutral. But you try to tell that to the local people living around these toxic hotspots in the north. They're dying of respiratory illnesses. And many of our indigenous peoples, and including the mestizos who live around these forests in the global south, you know, their rights are being also affected. Where these companies now own the carbon in those trees. And the agreements means that our local people down there who are dependent on the trees for their culture and their livelihood, they can have no more access to those trees. The social bosca in that area, the parks and the forest, they even have forest police that keep local people out. We're seeing this all over in Africa, in Kenya, with the Singwar people also being forced out of their homeland in these carbon offset plantations. So that's why we've always said there's something wrong with the market system and climate change. And so we were there with the delegation of indigenous people from the Lummi, the Canoe people of Lummi, who stood up against Shell 2 years ago, along with the environmental NGOs. And we took people from the tar sands, Alaska, all over, and we stood up and demanded our rights be recognized foremost. And that it was ironic that the UN prides itself on protectors of United of human rights throughout the world. But to see in the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change that certain countries and the UN going along with it, allowing the erosion of language that would strengthen the human rights and recognition of rights of indigenous peoples in those what's called the Paris Agreement to be weakened. You know, so we got a lot of work to do in the UN system, even to the meeting that's being held now, what they call COP22 in Morocco, in Marrakesh. So we're trying to meet with the